Good morning. I welcome you to our last day of Linux Tag. In this morning here we have three presentations about mobile communication and open source. The next presentation will be held by Mr. Max Jonas Werner. He is a software developer and he works on enterprise social networking software at a startup in Hamburg. He uses Linux since he was 16 and he tries to spread the free software by his talking and by his working. And he was before an IT consultant in Bonn and an editor at Linux Magazine in Munich. The title of his presentation is Smartphones and the Open Web. And this is really interesting because he will show that the technology in this very important market is proprietary technology at the moment. And I think he will show what is possible with open source.
All right. So, hello, everybody. I'm proud to be here at Linux Tag. And I don't know, I think most of you know this claim. I've been using Linux since 2000 and been working with it professionally since 2003. And I've heard this claim like in the last 10 years or so. But it still didn't happen. And I'm trying to show you why this actually doesn't matter. There was this time when netbooks came out with the Asus EPC 700 in about 2007-2008, which was this small backdoor because it shipped with Linux exclusively. And I thought, yeah, that could be actually a backdoor to spread Linux and free software to consumers. But since Asus, soon after the first launch of the Linux-only netbook, they introduced a Windows XP version. And so users actually didn't care that much about the Linux version, and that's why they rejected the Linux version. And so the netbook backdoor was closed again. And next came the smartphones. And I think this is a really good thing to spread free software because, the desktop never kept running, the Linux desktop movement. And so let's try it with the smartphone movement. And there are many more smartphones actually than desktop computers in the world, hundreds of millions. And everybody is using a smartphone, so let's try to proliferate free software with smartphones or on smartphones. And it has quite a lag. So which smartphones are out there? This is the market share from first quarter 2011 of smartphone operating systems. And as you can see, there are actually four important smartphone operating system that year, which is Android, Symbian, iOS, and BlackBerry OS from by RIM. And the market share in 2012 looks a bit different. Actually, Android and iOS share most of the market, which is 82%. And Symbian and RIM, Microsoft and Linux don't play that big role. So let's look at Android and iOS and look what we can achieve with these two operating systems to proliferate free software to consumers and to the overall market. And I looked at actually three different layers, which is the hardware, the operating system, and the apps. I'll leave out the hardware here because today because I don't see very big advances in open and free hardware in the last years, and I think it's going to take many more years because the hardware business is quite secretive, and I'm a software guy, so I will focus on the operating system and the apps. So what does iOS offer us? The operating system is that there's not very much to say. It's proprietary with a few exceptions, kernel, etc. But that's pretty much it. And so let's look at the developer tools. Also not free, not even free as in free beer, because you have to pay a developer program fee, which is $99 a year. And most of the time, you can only develop on a Mac, so you need a Mac to develop iPhone and iPad apps. The ecosystem is also quite proprietary and a black box. There's only Apple's App Store. You cannot use another App Store on not rooted phones. And it's actually not GPL compatible. You cannot distribute GPL software via the Apple App Store. And the usage rules are quite scary. As you can see on this slide, for example, the license agreement to the developer program, which you have to sign to get the SDK, forbids you to use the location API, for example, for fleet management. And it's not the best option, looks not as the best option to proliferate free and open source software. So what about Android, our big friend in the open source world? First, I'd like to conduct a little survey here in the hall by asking you, how many points between 0 and 100 would you give Android regarding its openness, openness of source code, community, and stuff? So just raise your hands. Who would give 0 to 33 points to the openness, which is 0 is not open? Who would give 33 until 66? All right. And 66 to 100? No one. All right. You know pretty much already. And I hate this latency. And so what about the operating system, which Android is composed of, the Android ecosystem? Most parts are under GPL, which is good, LGPL and Apache license, especially the Android-specific components which Google developed are under Apache license. Google doesn't like the GPL very much. The trademark is owned by Google. The source code is published at Google's will, or not at all, which happened with Honeycomb. They released the Honeycomb source code eventually with Ice Cream Sandwich. But they, when Honeycomb devices came out, they said, we will never release the source code because it's not ready yet to be used and stuff. So, they just do whatever they want with the source code and they develop behind closed doors. Officially, the Android project is maintained by the Open Handset Alliance, which is not a legal entity and thus a quiet, toothless tiger. There are many device vendors, members, in the Open Handset Alliance, but actually they don't have to say very much with regards to the development and the roadmap. And there we are, the next point, there is no public roadmap. Google just develops what they like. Of course, it's their project, and but you can't anticipate to new features, or you can't anticipate new features with new versions. As I said, development takes place behind closed doors, and the second point is getting better. We had this 1 or 2 years ago when there was big trouble between the Linux mainline kernel developers and the Android developers, because the Android developers actually forked the Linux kernel and didn't merge it back. But it's getting better, and both sides are actually getting to a point where they can cooperate. There's a contributor agreement, but I don't think many people are actually developing Android source code, people who are not employed by Google. But the documentation is very good. On the other hand, again, we have closed apps like Gmail, Play Store, Google Maps, and stuff. So let's resolve the survey. This is a chart by Vision Mobile. They conducted the Open Governance Index last year, and they scored Android with 23 points. So those with 0 to 33 were actually quite wide. Because, as I told, Android is actually an autocratic community, or not a community at all, because it's just a product by Google. And so it's not actually a free software project, an open source project like most people in the free software movement like, because there's actually no community involvement. The dev tools are a bit better. The SDK is free to download. The source code is in the repo, only in the repo. You can develop under Windows, Mac, and Linux. You have a plugin for Eclipse, so you can develop with free software. And there's even an ADK for low-level C and C++ development. Let's just leave the patent craze out. Because I think all this stuff shows enough to say that there's actually not an open and free mobile operating system at the moment. So patents, copyrights, yeah, it's there, and we actually can't change it. So the only open device and vendor independent platform is actually the web, which is governed by the W3C, which is actually a consortium of many different vendors. You have very powerful smartphone browsers. You have HTML5 and friends and stuff. And but the cons are you need a very modern smartphone and browser, and not all functions you have in native applications are actually not implemented or standardized yet. But you can say there's another mobile platform, so yeah, why not? I have a web app, and people just go there with their browsers. So I don't care about new platforms. I don't have to launch a new project. This is actually just a demo. I'm sending my location from my smartphone to my laptop now, and this is using the geolocation API of HTML. Quite simple, 3-4 lines of code. And next thing is the device orientation API, which works more or less like this. Also, 3-4 lines of code lags a bit because I'm using this over wireless LAN. But I think it shows what you can do with web apps. This is just web. So I disable location. And he's still, yeah, doing his stuff. Not real time, but yeah, you know what I mean. And there are some more functions you can use. I showed the accelerometer orientation. I showed the location. You can take photos. You can use 3D functions with HTML, but still not on mobile. And you have offline apps. Mobile HTML5.org shows you all the functions you have on mobile phones. This is quite cool. And last word about who the drivers are. I already told you about the W3C. But there's another one. And a small hint for you, it's Dinosaur Well Alive, so I think everybody knows what I mean. It's Mozilla. And after some years where Mozilla and with the Firefox browser was always behind development and innovation, they started to really put very much energy into mobile web development. This is a screenshot from the website aremobileyet.com, which is run by Mozilla, which shows how much features they already implemented. This is from August 2011. They already implement geolocation, the battery API. You can access the battery API with JavaScript. Quite useful for games and stuff. You can, on the right, there's camera support, so you can take photos with the camera. This was already possible in August 2011. And just some months after that, which is today, they implemented many more functions, which are web telephony, web SMS, and all that stuff. You can develop, you can send and receive SMS in HTML applications using JavaScript and all that stuff. And why they are doing this, this is the live website. You can click on this here, and you get into Bugzilla, the bug tracker, which tracks all those features. Web vibrator, you can vibrate the phone from JavaScript. And why are they doing this is because they have BootGecko, which is a complete web-driven mobile operating system. There's no device yet, but they actually launched the project this year officially. And at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, together with some vendors, I think LG is part of that, and they actually want to develop a truly open web platform, which is even more than WebOS was at Palm, because it's driven by Mozilla, which is a community-driven foundation, and they got pretty far already. They have the operating system, which is actually a combination of the Linux kernel underneath and the Gecko rendering engine on top, and all the apps are just rendered by Gecko. So you boot into Linux boots Gecko, then you have Gaia on top, and then you have actually a complete operating system. It's just a browser, and this is why they are so much behind the development of APIs like web telephony, web SMS, vibrator, and all that stuff, because it enables them to develop BootGecko, which is a very cool thing, and it enables web developers to develop near native or even equal native applications, which is one thing I always hear. You can't enable the user to have a native user experience, but with things as web vibrator, as stupid as it sounds, it's kind of important to give feedback to the user from your application, or web SMS. Perhaps there's not actually a big use case for web SMS besides BootGecko, because the SMS application in BootGecko is just HTML, so they need this API. But perhaps someone creative can develop a cool HTML application using web SMS. On the right side, there's even the OS access stuff, which is a contacts API and full screen API. What's that? Settings API, so you can store settings in the browser and stuff without using cookies or something like a local storage or something. So that's quite cool. And I hope we'll see a phone with BootGecko in the next, I don't know, 12 months, 2 years. The Mozilla developers are currently using Samsung Galaxy S2 phones to boot BootGecko. So it actually works on phones, but there's still no vendor who committed to selling BootGecko-only phones. All right, I do this by hand. But there's one more thing, which is app discovery and startup. Because users are already, even after some years of using iPhone and iPad, accustomed to go to some central place where they find apps and where they can install them and launch them. And this is something the web originally was not actually made for. So we have two vendors which already have developed, in the case of Google, a web store. And the Google web store is called the Chrome web store, which only runs in the Chrome browser. And the Mozilla app store is something quite new. They announced it, I think, in February, and a second announcement in May when they launched the closed beta. So we have already have two central places where you can place your apps for users to download and install. So they have them on their home screens and stuff. Wow, this is so annoying. All right. So with these two app stores, the Mozilla Marketplace and the Google Chrome Web Store, you have central locations for users to discover your app, to launch your app, and even to pay for your app or for something in your app. So Google has already in-app payment in their HTML web store. So even free software developers perhaps would like to get some money for something they did. Blah. That's too fast. Yeah, this is the use case I'm currently using. It's quite laggy. I don't know why. Perhaps because I'm using a wireless LAN at the moment. I control this whole presentation just by using my phone. See that? And this is done using an HTML5 achievement, which is called server-send events, which gives you that event source object. And you just instantiate an event source object, give it a URL, and then add listeners to it. And so you have, actually you have server push without using all the workarounds like Comet or something. In the browser, it's actually pretty the same as Comet because it just does long polling. So on the server side, you don't close the connection and push out your events. So the browser of the user can respond to it. That's a quite cool thing, and I really like that use case. So this is showing a very good use case for interconnecting web apps. I have two web apps. This is the controller. On the laptop, is the presenter is running, and I connected these two using just standard technology. And these mashups, like I just like to call them, are only possible with the web. Perhaps. And by the way, applications or vendors which have native applications like Twitter, Facebook, Google+, Google Maps, and all that stuff are actually just native user interfaces to web applications. You can use all these four applications completely from your browser without losing core functionality. Of course, right now you're losing some things like push notifications and stuff, but as I said, W3C and Mozilla and the other vendors like Google and Microsoft and Opera are developing standards to enable you to have that native experience in the browser. So the web app is native applications lock you in. You have one platform which you develop for, and if, for example, Apple decides to pull you out of their web store, you have nothing to you could do against it. Platforms come and go, like Webverse or something, which is quite dead, I think, after the developers have been bought by Google I heard this week. It's a viable and standardized platform. It's proven its stability in the last years, and but many APIs still have to be evolved. Like I told you, you don't have that complete native experience with web applications because you don't have that these stores already on many phones. Because the Mozilla store is in closed beta, the Chrome Web Store doesn't work on mobile phones. So it's a process, it's evolving, and every month, every week, there's more APIs that are implemented. So you should just consider. I ask you to just consider. Can a web app do what I like the app to do? Do I actually need a native application using all these APIs I just showed you? So the web is really the future of mobile free software. It's not Android. It's not all those closed systems. It's the web because it's the most open application platform we have in the world. And with this, I'd like to leave you with this thought. And I think we have two, three questions. If anyone has a question, ask now.
Thank you for your presentation.
If anyone has a question, I will come with a micro to him.
Test 1, 2, 3. Okay. Just one remark. The examples you've shown.
Okay. All right.
Test. Okay. The examples you've shown were Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus, and these are big companies that are able to run big server farms. And I don't think that it's possible for an open source developer or community to run big server farms, so I think that not all applications are in the web in the future.
Yeah, you're right in the sense that these are just the biggest applications in the world. There are not many of them. I think not every open source project needs such a big server farm to run their applications. Many projects already have big server farms for compiling their code and stuff. But you're right, if you have that many users, you have to think about how can I reach those users via the web. But these are really examples, the biggest examples in the world. And probably many projects don't need such big server farms.
Another question?
I wanted to ask, do you have an opinion of the hybrid apps?
Yes, I do. I think hybrid apps are a good way for developers of native apps to learn how they can leverage web APIs but deliver native experience to users for functions which are not implemented in web browsers at the moment. So yeah, in my company, I'm developing a pure web app for mobile phones, but we already thought about making it a hybrid app so people can download it in the App Store and have that little button on their home screen. So it's a good compromise, I think.
Are actually those the examples of the big companies that you showed, are they like hybrid apps? Because I think like the Facebook is exactly a web app that's made as a native app, as you said.
I don't know the internals of these apps because they are not open source, but of course they are using at least web APIs, which means like something like a REST API or something to transmit data, and the application itself is just a user interface. So, yeah. Perhaps the Facebook app, I think, looks very much like it's just a web a web view or something.